I've rushed. I live in London, but I've been in Leicester all day, so I rushed down on the train, and I'm going to be a bit like a bag lady. And in the biog you have on the sheet, it says a few things about some of the work that I do in the digital realm these days. I've been publishing print work since the late 1980s, but since the turn of the century, I've been working on digital projects as well. So, like I said, like a bag lady, I've got some kind of print manifestations of the digital works here, if people are interested afterward. I've got a bookmark for my digital project, Inanimate Alice, which is a multimedia novel in episodes that resides online. And the fourth episode we're going to be launching this week. So if you're interested, you could take away one of these bookmarks. But another project I'm currently involved with is called Flight Paths, which is an attempt to write a novel on and through the internet, open to collaboration, making public the process from sort of day one of research and thinking about the project. And that's kind of one of the main things I'm involved in at the moment. And like I said, it's open to contributions from anyone who's interested, but text, sound, photographs, videos, all manner of media, really. And my collaborator, Chris Joseph, who I also work with on Inanimate Alice, and I are attempting to kind of choreograph and curate this work on the internet. But the print iteration of this work at the moment is this postcard, Flight Paths, which, as you'll see if you take one, has my address at the university that I'm based at. If you would like to contribute a little piece of text of any kind, or a little drawing or anything like that, please feel free to take one of these postcards and contribute. So, I'll just put them here for now. Technological faux pas.
Can you bring this over slightly so you're not quite so strange?
Okay, thank you. I'm going to read a short story that's called Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now. And it's, as you will recognize, it takes the title from a Smith song. It was commissioned for an anthology where all the short stories take their titles from Smith's songs. This is edited by a guy called Peter Wilde, who last year published, he's doing a whole series of these books, and last year it was a book where all the stories took their titles from songs by The Fall, and this Smith's anthology will come out next year. And rather bizarrely, I wrote this story for the anthology, and I've been finding with short stories lately that I keep returning to this one particular voice, which is not something I've ever done with short stories before. So I think this is the fourth story that I've written in this voice, which is the voice of a middle-aged man. And this story is kind of about the collision between technology and modern life. And a couple of months ago, I had an email from a producer at Radio 4 asking if I'd had any stories that I'd written about this particular subject, and so it gave me great pleasure to be able to be paid twice for the same short story. And in fact, it was broadcast last Thursday on the afternoon reading Radio 4, so it's there on Listen Again currently until Thursday. So if you want to hear this story read by a man with a very strong Scottish accent, you can listen to it on the internet. But I will just read it with my own Canadian female voice. Heaven knows I'm miserable now. I didn't mean to become a laughing stock. I made a virtual birthday card for a woman I work with, nothing more than that. Not because I fancy her or anything. I'm a happily married man, though I do fancy her, to tell you the truth. It's a work thing. You know how it goes. She is kind and clever and good-looking, and when I'm with her, I'm funnier and sharper and a little bit more alive. And it was a simple enough gesture, really. Give your colleague at work a birthday card. Nothing sinister about that. But things got out of hand. Things always seem to get out of hand. a laughingstock. What in God's name does that mean? I should know, because that's what I became. In my job, I don't spend that much time on the computer, but I do use it for work email, timekeeping, logging complaints, that kind of thing. And YouTube videos do the round, like in any office. That pop band dancing on the treadmills, the baby whose fart sends a mushroom cloud of talcum powder up into the air. That was where I got the idea. I had all the right bits of technology at home. I kept our computer up to date with the latest software because I want my boy to be an active user of technology. It might help out when it comes time, perish the thought, for him to find his own way in the world. I'd never been that big of a Smiths fan. My father wouldn't let me listen to pop music when I was a kid, so my passion for the stuff came along a while after the Smiths had departed the scene, if a band like that can ever be said to have done such a thing. But there was one song I'd always liked, and I thought it would be funny to make a video of myself lip-syncing to it. For some unknown reason, unknown to me at any rate, I decided it would be a good idea to perform the song naked. A man singing along to the Smiths is one thing, but a naked man singing along to the Smiths, that would be funny. I wore a skinny necktie and a pork pie hat that I had purchased specially for the video on one of my trips through the West End of London. I positioned the camera in a place where I was sure I'd only be filmed from the waist up, and I planned to jump into the air a couple of times, rock star stylee, of course, as I thought that might make the video even more amusing. Downloading the track and setting up the webcam took longer than I expected. I wanted to be done before my boy got home from school. So when it came time to record my performance, there was only long enough for one take. So I recorded it, and then I uploaded it, and I wrote a short, and I thought, carefree and lighthearted birthday greeting email to my work colleague, containing the link to her birthday treat. I pressed send and thought nothing more of it. Finished buttoning my shirt as the boy came through the front door. That night, my boy woke up with some kind of stomach bug. He came into our bedroom to tell us he was going to throw up, and then he did throw up right there in the middle of the carpet. He continued to be sick for a couple of hours, and afterward, I sat with him in his room and stroked his forehead until he finally went back to sleep. I called in sick the next day so that I could stay home with him. This was the arrangement my wife and I had made years before, as her job is both much more lucrative and substantially more important and interesting than mine. I didn't mind, to tell you the truth. Staying home with the boy was kind of like a mini break for me. I work in the secure psychiatric unit of a large teaching hospital here in South London. I work part-time, mornings only. My job title includes the word administrator, but really I'm a kind of glorified orderly. I have had a certain amount of trouble in my own life with mental health, mostly when I was a teenager, and mostly because of my father, but I won't get into that now. The people in the secure psychiatric ward put paid to any real doubts I've ever had about my own sanity. Most of them are stark raving lunatics. On my first day at work, when I went into the men's toilet, the sink was missing. The night before, one of the patients had accidentally torn it from the wall when he used it as a launch pad in an attempt at suicide by hanging. He'd almost drowned instead when his not inconsiderable weight brought down the sink and flooded the bathroom. This craziness and the trauma and drugs that accompany its treatment means that here in the hospital among the staff there is a hearty camaraderie which translates into a lot of joking and a certain amount of drink-fueled high drinks in the pub after work. At least, that's what I'm told. I tend not to socialize much, actually not at all, with my colleagues, mainly because of my duties at home with the boy. But at the end of the day, I'm not really a very sociable person, a bit shy even. But at work, we all get on famously, or so I thought. My favorite colleague was always very kind to me, sweet and good-natured, even though she was a high-up consultant and I was a low-down orderly. My boy took 2 days to recover from his night of throwing up, and then it was the weekend, and I had enough seniority by this stage to not have to work on weekends, which was just as well, as my wife often had to work right through both days. So by the time I went back to work on Monday, I'd forgotten all about my lighthearted and carefree birthday email. That morning when I arrived, I said hello to the man who does the night shift. Ordinarily, he is very cordial, and he almost always asks after my wife and child. But this time he got straight to the point. You're lucky she's not going to Sue, mate. Who? There was no one called Sue in our unit. Sue you, of course, you great naked Wally. Litigation, whatever possessed you. Of course, I remembered the video then. But how did the night shift man know about it? It was between me and my colleague. The object of your affection thought it was hilarious. You are lucky she has a good sense of humor, mate. She took it upon herself to spread the news. It's not the song I would have chosen, of course. Nor I, said one of the junior doctors who'd just arrived in the office. Clearly they'd been discussing it endlessly. But it does have a sort of poignancy to it, I'll admit. Suddenly the room was full of other people, more of my work colleagues, laughing and talking amongst themselves as if they were the audience and I was up on the stage and they were waiting for me to start my performance. I cleared my throat and the crowd fell silent. Where is she? I asked. You're lucky, she's got the day off, someone said. Today's her actual birthday, you pillock, not last week, added another voice. And then they revealed the full truth to me. I had become an overnight sensation. My favorite colleague had forwarded my video to her colleague, who had forwarded it to the whole hospital. The NHS employs people from all over the world these days, and they all forwarded my video to their friends and family, who in turn had forwarded it to everyone they knew. My birthday greeting video went around the globe and back again several times. Turned out the entire world, at least millions of people with access to the internet, was laughing at me. What could I do? I couldn't quit my job. I love my job, and it suits me and my life perfectly. Without this job, I'd be even more of an idiot than I already am. I could apologize. I would apologize to my colleague, of course, but I couldn't apologize to the entire world. I'd have to keep apologizing for a very long time. I could front it out and claim the video had nothing to do with me. But then, perhaps, I'd look even more foolish. I could say I'd actually meant to send it to my wife, but that would remind everyone that I have a wife, and I wouldn't want anyone to have the bright idea of forwarding the video to her as well as the rest of the world. Assuming, of course, that she hadn't already seen it. Assuming that she hadn't already been forwarded my famous naked lip-syncing video. I could not think of anything to say. Luckily for me, one of the ward alarms went off and everyone rushed away. I sat back down on my desk and wondered if it was possible to die from humiliation. But no, I didn't die. I got on with the day and was almost offended to discover that my video was, in fact, pretty much old news as far as my colleagues were concerned. They were bored by me and my video already. After lunch, I made my way home, as always, on the bus. I walked over to my boy's school in order to pick him up. These days he usually makes his way home by himself, but I wanted to see him, wanted to be distracted by him. Once we got home, we played football on the PlayStation together for about twice as long as he was allowed ordinarily. Then I cooked a big tea and ate with him, then cooked and ate again once my wife got home at 9. She clearly did not know about the video. Unlike the rest of the world, she hadn't been forwarded that particular email. Our household remained peaceful and calm. I didn't have to explain why the video had seemed like a good idea at the time. I should have felt relieved, but I was too embarrassed to feel much of anything. Embarrassed, but full of dread as well. What would happen when my favorite colleague returned to work the next day? I had a bath and went to bed, but none of this was much use to me. I was at my desk when the consultant, the birthday girl herself, came into the office. I kept typing, although what I wrote was complete monkey. I heard her stop, and I could tell she was looking at me, but I could not look at her, could not take my eyes away from the computer screen. After a few very long minutes, she said, "Hi." I stopped typing. It took all of the fortitude I possessed not to lower my head onto the keyboard and sob. "Hello," I replied. I forced myself to turn around and look at her. She was smiling. She looked genuinely friendly. "You don't have to be mad to work here," she said after a pause. I finished the ward motto for her. "You have to be fucking crazy." She put her hand on my shoulder and gave it a squeeze. "It's a good song," she said. It is, I replied. It is indeed. Thank you.